And now, it's time for the biggest bonanza in podcasting. With Dominic Stern and Nicholas Hodel, this is the College Basketball Bonanza!
And here we go with the first edition of the College Basketball Bonanza in 2022. Big New Year's wishes to you from myself, Nicholas Hodel, Dominic Stern, Dominic Contini. We are all back, the three of us. First time in a while that it's been the three of us all back in action. And since I haven't been around for a little bit, how's you guys' breaks?
It was a great break. I'm excited to be back in Arizona. And we're 9 weeks away from Selection Sunday and the best time of year. So let's get it started.
It's crazy that we can now count on our hands how many weeks we have until Selection Sunday sets. It's a cool nugget that you used to out there. But my break was good. It was good to be back home, relax for a little bit. But it's time to be back here in Arizona, working, doing our shows. So yeah. I'm pumped.
Yeah, working and as busy as ever, especially with college basketball. And especially after the kind of Saturday we had as well, as teams were falling left and right. And most of it happened with ranked road teams, but the biggest result of the entire day, Duke losing in Cameron Indoor to Miami in what was a pretty solid game. I had my attention focused a little bit elsewhere on games like Tennessee and LSU and Iowa State and Oklahoma, which we'll talk about a little later on as well. But this was quite the result for the ACC, as it means Miami is the only unbeaten team left in ACC play. And my goodness, this might really kickstart something for Miami.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you look at the stat sheet, it doesn't, like, seem like Duke played that bad. It's just they didn't play better to the opponent, so they didn't play to their standards. And that's going to haunt you in college basketball. It's surprising that Coach K loses at home, but this will definitely be a big boost to the Hurricanes.
Yeah, and before I get to Mr. Stern, I'll just read off some of the particular team stats from this game. Both teams shot very similar in the field goal percentage. Duke made a couple more threes than Miami. The free throw percentage for Duke was higher than Miami, and Duke had a plus 14 rebound margin, but the big difference here, Duke's 17 turnovers to Miami's 5. And that particular stat's a pretty good formula for how stuff like this usually goes.
Yeah, no, the first thing I was going to point out was the turnovers. It just felt like Duke, anytime like they got the lead back, they would just give it away because it would give Miami easier baskets by turning the ball over, getting Miami running down the floor. It just wasn't clean basketball. And we've talked about it. The good Duke teams have always had really good point guards. And Wendell Moore, he's been good this year, 12 points in this game, 7 assists, 12 rebounds, but he also had 6 turnovers. Like, you can't have that, because while you are creating baskets for your team, you're also creating other opportunities for the other team to score. And that just can't happen. So he needs to clean it up a little bit, because he did have a good game. Banchero had 20. Mark Williams had 12 points, 6 blocks. Like, that's insane. Duke shouldn't have lost this game, but Miami was able to make the 2-point shots that they were taking because they were getting good looks, and Duke was giving them even better looks. So Duke's offense hasn't exactly been the same since they came back from their COVID pause. I'd still expect them to win the ACC, but it was definitely a rough look for them.
Yeah, I do as well for Duke. I mean, this is nowhere near the end of the story for the ACC. I mean, this conference, as far as the Powers Conference goes, is about as sickos as it gets this year, with I'm expecting cannibalization left and right out of this conference. Yeah. And ultimately, that's going to provide a path for Duke to really show its superiority over the course of time. So I don't necessarily see much of a problem with Duke at the moment, other than the fact that they picked up a quad 3 loss at the moment, which is critical. And as of now, it's borderline. We'll talk about Miami and their resume situation in just a little bit. But first, I just want to give a big shout out to Miami senior guard Charlie Moore on the performance he had. He was terrific and leading the team in scoring of 18 points, but 7 steals. That's a big one. And in a game where it was really defined by Duke's turnovers, Charlie Moore was the one causing the most havoc.
Looking at their KenPom page, it kind of stands out. They're 200th in adjusted defense. So this team is not good defensively. But what they do is they turn the ball over, 33rd in steal percentage. So you see that with Charlie Moore, they you're going to get good shots up against Miami. It's just whether or not you can get them up without turning the ball over. So we'll see if Duke can adjust from that. But Miami, they deserve all the credit in the world. They went in there, did exactly what they needed to do, made shots, forced some turnovers, which is what they do. And very impressed from the Hurricanes.
And I wanted to add, this game had a lot of runs. I mean, there was a 12-2 run at one point, an 18-2 run at one point, 10-0 run at one point, 13-2 run at one point. It was back and forth all night. And this, I the turnovers are there, but I would say, like, this is a fluke for the Duke Blue Devils. Like, yeah, they turn over the ball a lot, but besides the turnovers, they still didn't play to their standards, but they didn't play terribly.
Yeah, and I mean, anytime you give up that many turnovers, you're bound to put yourself in situations you don't want to be in. Yeah. And that was certainly the case. And 15 of the 17 turnovers came via Miami steals, 7 of them through Moore alone. So that was a big, big deal in this particular game. But for the current ACC leader, Miami, this was a big win for them. It really puts Miami in a position now to where they have a quality win, and it's going to stay like that for quite a while. You know, they don't have any bad losses in any of the bottom two quadrants, 4-2 in quad two, 1-1 within that top quadrant with 3 more games to go, including on Tuesday at Florida State, which is a borderline quad one game at the particular moment. And it seemed like a lot of the big pundits said that Miami may have been the ACC's number two team, because a lot of the talk is out of the ACC, not good outside of Duke. And they were pointing at this particular game, seeing that Miami is the number two. Do you guys buy that?
I definitely buy that. I mean, the ACC is so weird this year. There's like Virginia is having a down year. North Carolina is having a down year. Louisville is having a down year. Like, all the big names in this conference are down. And I would say number two is either Miami, Virginia Tech, or Notre Dame. All three of those teams have a great shot, number two. Like we said earlier, I still think Duke is the pivotal favorite in this conference. But to answer your question, yes, Miami is number two right now. And their schedule ahead is, I would say, kind of light. I mean, they have Florida State twice in their next three games. So we're going to learn a lot about them against the Seminoles. So I'm excited to see what this team can do the rest of the way in the ACC conference schedule.
I would say UNC's the second best team in the ACC. They have one of the best players in this conference, Armando Bacot, and they don't have any bad losses. Every single loss they have is away from the Dean Dome. Neutral site against Purdue, neutral site against Tennessee, neutral site against Kentucky, and then a road loss to Notre Dame. And we've seen Notre Dame get multiple really good wins at home. So you have three neutral site losses to really good teams, like teams that we could see playing deep into March Madness this year. And then a road game against a borderline tournament team. So I'd roll with North Carolina.
I think for Miami, I'm cautiously optimistic with this Miami team. You look at what their team sheet looks like at the moment. Like I mentioned earlier, they don't have any bad losses in the bottom two quadrants, and that always helps. And if that stays tacked, it is going to help Miami out. And I think the one thing that is going to really take the bracketologies and not put Miami in their field of 68 after this Duke win is the fact that, you know, you mentioned the KenPom defensively. I mean, you look at between Net, KenPom, BPI, Saturn, and the KPI, their net rank as of today is the highest, and it's number 80. So that to me indicates they still have a lot of work to do despite a top 45 strength of schedule and despite a top 30 strength of record. I think they still have a lot of work to do. And I also want to bring this up as well. Miami has more quad three games left than quad one games.
That's scary.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, five quad three games left compared to just three in quadrant one, which includes that game at Florida State on Tuesday, also at Virginia Tech, at Wake Forest. So that is going to be really big right there. And to your point of North Carolina, you know, imagine if Miami gets that win and North Carolina is in the top 30 in net. That becomes a quad one game. So there's a lot of time for a lot of things to happen within this ACC. But it's just, I got to be cautious with Miami right now, because if they start dropping games, it's gonna be really difficult to justify a Miami NCAA tournament bid, despite the great games that they've had all throughout December and through January to this point. Miami has been very solid, but let's not make any mistakes here. There's a lot of work left to do for this Miami team. To move on with more of this Saturday slate, which was filled with chaos, particularly in the Big 12, just all kinds of chaos within the conference, with three top 15 teams in the Big 12 alone losing on the road. And we'll start off with Kansas here. Very good win for Texas Tech here, 75-67 win. What did you guys see from this game?
It was a road Big 12 game. Like, that's going to happen in this conference. This conference is the gauntlet of all conferences. So I'm kind of worried for the Jayhawks. I mean, they have Iowa State up next. If they don't turn things around after this game, because I would not say Kansas looked that great against Texas Tech. They are one of the best teams in the country, don't get me wrong. But their performance against Texas Tech was a very porous performance. So I'm worried for them going forward.
I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about Kansas, but definitely a bit of a head-scratching performance. Remy Martin, only 12 minutes. David McCormick, only 14 minutes. And outside of Ochai Agbaji, Christian Braun, and Jalen Wilson, no one on this team scored more than 5 points, and they only had four other players score. So they only had seven guys put the ball in the basket. You just can't win games on the road, especially in the Big 12, like that. And you got to give a lot of credit to Texas Tech. Really balanced performance. I mean, you had Bryson Williams get 22 and Clarence Nadolny get 17. But outside of that, had a lot of guys make multiple shots. That's team basketball. That's what Texas Tech has played. That's the culture that Chris Beard has instilled. And Mark Adams has kept that there. He's done a great job so far. I mean, they nearly won on the road at Iowa State, down like five players. So Texas Tech has been super impressive. I mean, I didn't expect them to be anywhere near this good. I expect them to be obviously a tournament team, but I think that we're seeing the fact that this is a good basketball program. And it's not, it wasn't just Chris Beard. It was Mark Adams. It was some of the other players, Marco Santos Silva. I'm very impressed with Texas Tech. I think this game needs to be more about Texas Tech than it needs to be about Kansas. They have their own concerns from this game, but the Red Raiders, very impressive.
And this Texas Tech team, what they've done the last couple of games, very much shorthanded, with only seven guys against Iowa State in what was a very defensive game that Iowa State ended up winning in what was a very tough environment. And now this game where you have eight players, but you're essentially playing with seven because Batch only had 5 minutes. You know, that is a big sign for this Texas Tech team, what they're able to do without a lot of guys. I mean, you look at this game, Kansas had double the amount of bench players that played in this game with Texas Tech. And
that stood out to me a ton. And if you look at their percentages, for three-pointers, Kansas made 13 more percent than Texas Tech. They shot 10 for 26 from three, and Texas Tech shot 4 for 16. And then if you look at free throws, they made the same, and Texas Tech had more. Like, Kansas, it's such a head scratcher because they're way more deep, and I don't know. Like, I think Dom's point of it being a head scratcher more than me worrying about Kansas. It was an anomaly.
Yeah, Texas Tech outrebounded Kansas by 10 and won the turnover battle by 5. So those are also a couple of big points as well. You guys mentioned Iowa State. They had an interesting loss, to say the least, to Oklahoma, 79-66. And I was kind of watching this a little bit while also paying attention to what Tennessee and LSU were doing, which we'll talk about them a little bit later on. Both of these teams shot very well from the field. Both teams over 55%. Both teams over 47% from beyond the arc. But you look at the free throws. Iowa State had one free throw attempt the entire game. And that does not happen very much in college basketball, guys.
No, and this game was close, and then Oklahoma just killed them in the final 10 minutes, winning 27-9. Iowa State, very good team. Don't get me wrong. But they need to have more players step up than Isaiah Brockington. You got 20 out of Tyrese Hunter, but you didn't really get anything else out of anyone else. 12 from Trey Jackson, but once again, not a lot of production there. And you're not going to win a lot of games scoring 66 points. Sure, Iowa State's a defensive-minded team. That's perfectly fine, but you got to find ways to put the ball in the basket, because when you face a team like Oklahoma, who has been super impressive, you got Elijah Harkless, Jalen Hill, Tanner Groves, Jacob Groves. These guys can all score. And when you face a team like Oklahoma that can score, when you face these Texas Techs, the Texas, Baylor, Kansas, these teams can score. And I'm a little concerned for Iowa State because they're off to a great start this year. They're a good team, but their offense is just really concerning. 144th in adjusted offensive efficiency. So they've now lost two of their last three. Obviously, to start Big 12 play, that's not good. And it doesn't get any easier because the next three are Kansas, Texas, Texas Tech. So Iowa State's got to figure it out, or otherwise they could be slipping down those Big 12 standings.
And I do think that this Iowa State team, we're going to see what this team is truly made of when it comes to Big 12 play. This is one of those teams that they really impressed in the non-conference slate. And some of their wins are going to hold up very well. And the win against Xavier, the win against Iowa, I think are wins that are going to hold up. And we'll see what Memphis is able to do over the course of time. And if they really improve, that's only going to help Iowa State out. I do think that, you know, the last three games, I mean, a great effort against Baylor at home, the defensive slugfest against Texas Tech, and then this game, it kind of does show a team that's just kind of like an average Big 12 team, which is still really good because the Big 12 is insane every year. But I think that it's really going to show that perhaps the polls were a bit inflating of this team because they just kept on winning. And I had a feeling in the back of my head that the polls just didn't quite have the read in Iowa State, that it was really a matter of this team had some good non-conference wins and the pollsters saw that. I never saw this Iowa State team as a top 10 team nationally. And I think they're going to come back down to earth a little bit. And what wins they do get are going to be very, very crucial. And Iowa State is the unfortunate team that drew Missouri in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And they'll get to dodge that landmine. But other than that, there's no true landmines in the Big 12. That's just how good the conference is. And that's only going to benefit Iowa State and its defense that's ranked 6th nationally. You do make the point of the offense. That has to improve. I don't think there's any way around that whatsoever.
20% turnover percentage.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to really, really improve that. But Oklahoma, to speak on them a little bit, I mean, 5 players had at least 9 points within this particular game. I mean, obviously they had a lot more free throws than Iowa State did. And that is always going to benefit you if you're going to the line more than your opponent. That is always going to benefit you in that regard. Also in the state of Oklahoma, Texas losing to Oklahoma State 64-51. And this Oklahoma State team, yes, they're ineligible for the NCAA tournament, but this is still a good team. And I don't think there's any denying that whatsoever. And Keelan Boone, the junior guard, what a game he had off the bench with 17.6 rebounds. That is the kind of performance off the bench that really lifted this Oklahoma State team over this top in my book.
Yeah, Kieran Boone, he was a star yesterday, and he was 5 for 7 from behind the arc. And his Oklahoma State team, I mean, they've stuck in games all year, and now they finally got over the top against a great Texas – not a great Texas – a good Texas team. So I'm wondering if this is going to give him a little boost going forward. I mean, I know, Nick, you saw him in person, and you even said it yourself, this Oklahoma State team is a solid team, so they're going to give Big 12 teams some havoc. So like you said 2 minutes ago, there's no landmines in this conference, and Oklahoma State is just a measure of that. So,
yeah, and that game I did see, Oklahoma State and Cleveland State, and Cleveland State gave them one heck of a game. And we'll talk about the mid-majors a little bit. Maybe not Cleveland State in particular, but that's a team that could do some damage over in the Horizon League. But to get it back to the Big 12, you know, Oklahoma State, I mean, that's a team that is still a good team, but because they're ineligible for the NCAA tournament, they're going to play spoiler a little bit in this Big 12 conference as far as trying to get some of these wins and build themselves a very good season. And that includes this Texas team, who is one of only two teams in the conference to not have a quad one win up to this point. The other of those is TCU. And like we mentioned, not a lot of landmines within this particular conference. And really, the only one that's left outside the top two quadrants is a home game against Kansas State that's coming up in a week from Tuesday, January 18. And other than that, it is almost exclusively quad one the rest of the way. And now the big thing for Texas, of course, is it doesn't matter how many quad one games you play. If you can't win a lot of them, the volume of losses you pick up is going to be eye-catching to the committee, and that's not going to be good news for you whatsoever. They are going to get the win against some really good teams. And to this point in the season, they haven't quite proven that outside of a home win against West Virginia. Are you guys concerned about where this Texas team is going?
I am. They just haven't done anything, like you mentioned. Like, they haven't done anything bad. Their three losses are at Oklahoma State, which, like you guys mentioned, good team. At Seton Hall, which we know is a very good team. And at Gonzaga, also, we know, very good team. So they haven't done anything that, like, makes you scratch your head. But we knew that this team would be a team that kind of, like, needed some time because it was a lot of new players on the team, new coach. So we knew that they'd, like, have to build themselves up. But I don't think they did themselves a lot of favors in the non-conference. They only played three teams that are in the Power Six, Stanford, Seton Hall, and Gonzaga. They only won one of them, which is fine. You have to play those games, but just playing like Encarnate Ward, Alabama State, Arkansas Pine Bluff, UT Rio Grande Valley, playing those teams doesn't help you like figure out your team for going into Big 12 play. It might for some other teams who like have already established some stuff, but we haven't seen it from them. They don't shoot the three ball very well. I mean, because this team goes at such a slow pace, which is perfectly fine. It's what the Chris Beard teams have done. But when you go at that slow pace and you don't make shots, especially from the outside, 3-point percentage, they're going to struggle. So I think they're going to be prone to some losses on the road for sure. And they're going to pick up some home wins against some of these good teams. They're going to get those quad one wins because they're talented. And there's a lot of them, like you mentioned. So I'm not concerned, but it's like, all right, Texas, we got to see this soon.
And before I move on to what Contini has to say, I just want to mention that Stanford game is dangerously close to being a quad three game. Stanford, number 100 in net right now, then that needs to stay in the top 100 for that to not be a quad three game. I just wanted to mention that real quick.
Yeah, I'm good. Dom summed that up pretty well, so we can move on to the next game.
Yeah. And I think he did too. It's one of those things to where, like, you play a bunch of quad four games in non-con. You're going to get win. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn about your team, which I think that's ultimately one of the purposes of those games. You want to learn a little bit about your team, especially early on in the year. And I think especially so when we consider that Gonzaga game back at the start of the season was really more of a culture war between the two programs than anything else. The Seton Hall game was a really good game. Perhaps that started raising some questions. Play a few more of these quad four games, pick up some quad two wins in the Big 12 Conference. Then your first quad one game in the Big 12 Conference is this loss. Yeah, that's going to start raising some questions with some people all across the country. And to carry on, because it wasn't just the ACC, it wasn't just the Big 12. Stuff was happening everywhere. And to carry on the theme with the rogue teams, a couple of them within the SEC, Alabama losing to Missouri on the road was definitely a major, major head scratcher. 92-86, both these teams shot very well amongst each other, similar to the Miami Duke game, nearly identical field goal percentages and identical three-point shooting nights. Missouri had 11 more free throw attempts than Alabama, out-rebounded the Tide by 12, and did not win the turnover battle. Alabama won that turnover battle 10-7. But this is a loss that's going to stick with Alabama for quite a while on that resume. Could cost them an entire seed line, or perhaps even worse.
Well, yeah, Alabama. You go.
All right. I was just going to say, Missouri shot 11 more free throws than the Crimson Tide, and they made a whole lot more of them. So they shot 9% more, better from the charity stripe, and that's going to win big games for Missouri. And Alabama, they've not impressed me lately. I mean, they had that game against Houston. I mean, they have the wins. They beat Gonzaga, one of the best teams in the country. But running up 92 points to a team like Missouri in the SEC conference, that's going to stick with them, like you said, Nick. So I'm interested to see where this team goes forward.
I don't think this Alabama team is that good, if I'm being completely honest. Their strengths last year were three-point shooting and elite defense, and when they just ran up and down the court, they could turn you over, and it just made for a disaster to play them. This year, they're 211th in the nation at three-point shooting, 32.7%, and they're 62nd in adjusted defense. They allow 50% of shots to be made from inside the arc. That's 227th in the nation. So they have a lot of problems here. The talent is undoubtedly there. They have the formula, but they got to start making the shots from the outside, because this defense is really concerning. And that was supposed to be the strength of this team. It's what it was last year. They had an elite defense. Let's see, where were they? They were third in adjusted defense last year. And they also shot 35% from three, as opposed to the 32% they have right now. So they have problems. I think they're going to get fixed, but this game was eye-opening because, Nick, like you mentioned, Missouri's awful. And they went on the road. They should have won this game, and they should have won it pretty handedly, but Missouri took it to them, 92 points. It's crazy.
Yeah, and this is currently a quad three loss, and that's about as good as it's going to get, which is not good at all. And Missouri is even worse. That game could fall into quad four easily. Missouri today, 201st in net, and they fall about 40 more spots between now and Selection Sunday. That's a quad four loss for Alabama, and that rematch is coming up in 2 weeks, actually, on January 22. In between, you got Auburn and LSU at home, and you go to Starkville to play Mississippi State. So there will be three games in between that really teach this team a lot. But this is such a very interesting resume, because you have plenty of quality wins at this moment. Houston, Tennessee, both of those coming at home. At Florida was a solid win as well. The neutral site game against Gonzaga was a really good win. But yet the collection of losses they have, neutral site Iona, road Memphis, neutral site Davidson, and now the away loss to Missouri, is just very, very interesting. And they have proven that they can play solidly against good teams, but the losses they picked up along the way are definitely almost sort of confusing, I would say, because, I mean, all the metrics love this Alabama team, but the collection of losses is just very, very interesting, and you do have to really take that into consideration almost the rest of the way. To stick at the SEC, the LSU-Tennessee game I've been talking about a little bit over the course of this program, LSU 79, Tennessee 67. LSU, to me, looked really, really good. And they did just a lot of things right in this game to ensure that Tennessee didn't really have much of a chance to really find their footing, especially in the second half. Just a very impressive half, just that alone from LSU. I mean, it's a 12-point win. They had a 20-point lead at one point in this game. Just controlling that game all throughout was very, very crucial. And, you know, some of these bench players have really stepped up for LSU across the country, not just LSU. In LSU's case, insert sophomore forward Terry Eason with a big 24-point, 12-rebound night, leading the team in both of those areas. And if we break it down by offensive and defensive, Eason's 5 offensive, 7 defensive, led the team in each of those areas as well. Added a couple blocks as well. He really stood out in this particular game. And you got to find that X factor in games like this. And LSU, they certainly have found an X factor in this game. And I think the pollsters have taken a while. I've taken a while to catch up to that because LSU has been ranked highly in net all year long since it first came out. LSU is now the number 3 team in net. They are in a top 10 position in KenPom, in Sagarin, and BPI, number 3 strength of record. And I think people have slept a little bit on LSU, myself included, and it's time that stops because LSU has really proven that they can play with the best of the best in the SEC.
Well, the transformation of this LSU team is kind of insane. Their defense on Will Wade teams has not been good. They're 59th in 2019. They're 179th in 2020. That team was a disaster defensively. They're 124th last year. Where are they this year, guys? Number 1. And it's not even close either. They're so far and away have the best defense in the country right now, according to KenPom, at 83.8 adjusted defense. Number 2 is VCU at 87.3. Like, this LSU team is playing fantastic defense. I really don't know what changed, like, because obviously they bring in Xavier Pinson, who was the point guard for Missouri's good defense last year. But it just seems like Will Wade has got everyone to buy in this year. The offense, it's not great. You know, they do have their concerns. They are 75th in adjusted offense. But when your defense is that elite, you have a good offense to go with it. And when you have guys coming off the bench like Tari Eason playing 32 minutes and getting 24 points, including 12 rebounds, like you mentioned, Nick, this team has an insanely high ceiling. And they're a ton of fun to watch because Tennessee's very good this year. And they just clamped them up and shut them down.
And I'm just looking at the moment through the KenPom and the gap right now. I mean, you mentioned that. I mean, we have never ended a season in the KenPom era with as big a gap between number 1 and number 2 in adjusted offensive efficiency as we have right now. And that is really saying something of just how above and beyond this team has really set themselves. And that is going to really benefit them over the course of time. And it's going to be another one of those situations to where it's LSU, they just keep on rolling. And it's super, super impressive what they've done. I mean, it's a complete flip in the KenPom efficiency profile. I mean, last season it was an offense that was top 5 nationally and a defense, like you mentioned, that just wasn't up to par. This year, their offense, still in the top 75 at number 75, but has some work to do. It's the defense that's carrying this team. And typically, that's the profile you want to try and win yourself championships. So that's going to be very key for LSU, I believe, going forward. And this is really the SEC this year. You're going to pull so many games like this. I don't think you get too concerned quite yet with Tennessee. At 10-4, they don't have a really bad loss. I mean, the loss they've taken, neutral site Villanova, neutral site Texas Tech, and road games to Alabama and LSU. That's a pretty good collection of losses if you're going to take losses to this point in the season. And Tennessee, by the way, which I should mention this as well, they're number three nationally in defense right now. So the LSU in that defense matchup, the LSU to really come away with that as well as it did is really impressive to me. What says you, Mr. Contini?
Yeah, I mean, these four losses are some of the best losses in the country. I mean, this Tennessee team is legit. Like you said, they're number three in defense in KenPom. Then they have the schedule to back it up. They have wins against North Carolina, Arizona, and a Mississippi team that is down, but they won, pulled out in overtime. So this the SEC, I would say, is pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of teams in this conference that is going to boost people's resumes. I mean, teams' resumes. So Tennessee, yeah, is just another one, another good loss. So I expect them to be fine going forward. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be fine. So,
yeah, they're going to be really good going forward. But 32% from behind the arc, that's 237th in the nation, and 69% from the free throw line, that is 226th. So they got to improve on those two aspects because the free throws, it's a bonanza staple. Got to make your free throws. And then three-point shooting, it's never been Tennessee's strength in the past, but they got to get that a little bit better. But I feel like Tennessee will be better off if they start making more free throws because then maybe you can find ways to win those close games against Alabama, that overtime game against Texas Tech. They got killed against Villanova. Nothing they could do in that game, and same with LSU. But make more free throws, and you're going to find yourself winning those close games a little more.
Yeah, and let's not forget the fact, too, that the SEC is really, really good this year. And that 69% from the free throw line is not going to cut it. It's not. That's going to slip Tennessee down over the course of time in the SEC. They have got to improve that, absolutely. And as far as these road-ranked teams getting upset goes, I think we say Dominic Stern's best for last. 79-49 against San Diego State? Wow.
Dude, that was so impressive. And these programs, they deserve a lot of credit for scheduling this game. Both teams had COVID problems, not only within their programs, but also with the teams that are supposed to play this past week. So they said, all right, you know, the Mountain West, they're doing their part by getting these games on CBS and like getting more reps on the conference. And so when they have the CBS game lined up and those games get canceled, they had to reschedule and get this game on there. So credit to Colorado State for going on the road with their undefeated record with 3 days notice to go play San Diego State. They deserve a lot of credit. And Isaiah Stevens and David Roddy, they did their thing. And they're going to do that 17 and 19. But San Diego State's defense is so stifling. They're able to limit the rest of the team to scoring 12, 13 points in the rest of the game. It was an incredible defensive performance. Matt Bradley, 4 of 6 from three. That is huge because he has not been a good three-point shooter at all this year. It really hasn't been a good shooter at all. Lamont Butler returned from his injury, and he had a great game, 11 points. Playing the on-ball defense with 4 steals, stayed out of foul trouble. Kashad Johnson, another double-digit performance, going 4 of 6 from the free throw line. This team's really dangerous, and like I texted you guys yesterday, all is right. San Diego State Aztecs, they're back on top of Mountain West. That's no disrespect to Colorado State because this is a great team, but San Diego State punched them straight in the mouth, and they couldn't do anything about it. The San Diego State defense is elite. One bad game against Michigan has kind of like inflated their numbers and what it should be. I think this is probably the second best defense in the country, only behind LSU.
Yeah, that bad, you say bad game against Michigan. No one has expected Michigan to have the downfall that they had these past couple weeks, but a staggering stat from Colorado State from yesterday, they shot 3 for 20 from behind the arc. I don't know if I've ever seen a team stat like that. I don't know why a team is shooting 20 threes if they're only making 3 of them, and they probably should have changed that. But like you said, San Diego State is one of the best defensive teams in the country, and they showed that yesterday, holding Colorado State to just 49 points, and then on the other side of the floor, 279 and being a great team like Colorado State by 30. So I'm excited to see the San Diego State team going forward. We saw them against Arizona State. Arizona State played them tough, but this San Diego State team is legit. They're at the top of Mountain West Conference, like Dom said. So the Aztecs are back.
And one of the things, too, that's starting to annoy me a little more this season than in particular seasons is noticing the proportion between a team's overall amount of field goal attempts and three-point attempts. 20 of Colorado State's 43 field goal attempts were from beyond the arc, nearly 50%. And like you mentioned, if you're not making them, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you there, but.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but in San Diego State, they allow 3 points at 27.4%. The on-ball switching defense from San Diego State, it makes it tough to make shots. So the Aztecs deserve a little bit of credit for Colorado State's bad shooting performance. And like I said, I don't think this is indicative of Colorado State. The rest of the team scored 12 or 13 points, and they had 3 days to prepare for this elite defense. They're going to be fine. They're an NCAA tournament team. I'd like to think that they'd still be ranked after this week. And I'd also like to think that the Aztecs are also going to be ranked after this week, considering their three losses are at BYU, neutral site against USC, and at Michigan. Those are three great losses for a, well, we call them high major, but a mid-major team. And they've killed almost everyone else that they've played. So this Aztecs team deserves a lot of credit, and I couldn't have been more excited. They're 1-0 in the era in which my girlfriend, Brooklyn, bought me a new Aztec shirt. They're 1-0 with a plus 30 point differential. So
coincidence? I think not.
Big game upcoming at Wyoming. Wyoming's really good this year.
Yeah, and Wyoming's have been an interesting case through the course of this year. Just to touch up on them real quickly, they started out as high. They've been as high as number 9 in net. They've fallen off a little bit since to number 32 in net, a top 40 strength of record, which is no joke. Up until this point in the year, they've had their last game was on Christmas Day, so they do have a little bit of a layoff, but that'll be very interesting for Wyoming. But for Colorado State, just to mention where they're at as far as their resume is right now, a top 25 strength of record, and I don't think that can be too surprising based off the undefeated mark up until this point. Number 41 in net, outside the top 50 in KenPom. Stature and KPI puts Colorado State barely in the top 40. The strength of schedule chuts outside the top 100. And I think the important thing for Colorado State is, in an ideal world for Colorado State, they need to go the rest of the month undefeated. And I'm going to tell you why I think that is. Between now and the end of the month, they will have 4 quadrant 3 games, even split between home and away. 1 quadrant 4 game at home against New Mexico on January 19th. So there's a lot of landmines you have to avoid if you're Colorado State. If you slump now, it's going to cost you big time. And they have a quad 2 game coming up on Wednesday against Utah State. Should be a good home game. But after that, you got to go unbeaten the rest of the month. And I believe that includes at Wyoming on January 31st, which – we'll see where Wyoming goes. I don't know if that's going to stay in the first quadrant. But after that, you have only 1 quadrant 3 game the rest of the way, excluding the conference tournament, which will get more games in there, of course. Plenty of quad 2s within that stretch. But for Colorado State, you're entering a critical few weeks that can make or break you as time goes on. And there is also a couple of close calls within this week. I mean, TCU played Baylor really well. I was trying to watch a little bit of this, and it seemed like TCU was doing some things that not necessarily gave Baylor trouble along the course of ways, but TCU out-rebounded Baylor, which that is, I don't think, any small feat whatsoever. And within the context of this particular contest. So I thought TCU played a really solid game. And how about Penn State and Purdue? This was a really tight game for the longest of times. Purdue ended up having enough to get themselves a crucial victory within the contest of the Big Ten standings, going to 2-2 in conference play. But to kind of get to this game a little bit, the shooting numbers were pretty even. 3 points the same way. Neither team shot above 70% from the free throw line. That's got to improve for both teams. Both teams had 30 rebounds, and it was pretty close in the turnover battle, Purdue winning it 11-8. I mean, I got to give a lot of credit to Penn State for this particular game. Definitely a team that is not going to be a walkover in Big Ten play.
Yeah, Coach Micah Shrewsbury definitely wanted to show his strength against his former colleague, Matt Painter, and he certainly did. I mean, Penn State was in this game for pretty much all of it until the very end. And I said this yesterday to my dad. I mean, there's 5-6 teams in this conference that I think have a chance at winning the Big Ten.
And that is no small feat for this Big Ten conference either. Just it's a really good conference. I mean, obviously the Big 12 top to bottom is pretty much the best conference on an annual level. But the Big Ten, with the number of top teams that it has, makes it one of the most compelling conferences to watch of any conference in the entire country. And it's only going to get even more competitive. But the amount of teams that are at 2 conference losses, you know, 5 teams are at 3-1 or better, with Illinois, Michigan State at 4-0 in conference play. There's going to be a lot of very competitive games that come out of the Big Ten Conference. And that's not – it won't surprise anyone, because that's how good this conference is. A couple more notes up from the Saturday slate. I thought Wichita State gave Houston a very good game within the early window. Houston ended up winning it by 10. But those are the kind of games that you got to get out of with wins if you're Houston. And I do think that Houston very much in the driver's seat of this conference. But there is a little bit of chaos behind them with Tulane, SMU, and Memphis that won conference loss at this point, but still very early in conference play. But here's the guy I really want to talk about. Seton Hall and UConn. Overtime win for Seton Hall. One of the best games I've watched all year. Back and forth. I mean, this game never got to this. There was never a double-digit lead for either side. This was one of those games that was extremely competitive. The overtime was really competitive as well. I believe this is one of the best games we'll see in the Big East all year and nationally as well.
Yeah, I mean, both you and me, Nick, were very high on UConn after their MTE earlier in the non-conference schedule. This game was fabulous. It was the definition of college basketball. This is what we're here for. This is why we do this show. And we've talked about Seton Hall all year. Seton Hall is a great team. And for them to pull out this victory in overtime against UConn is going to spark them the rest of the way in this Big Ten schedule. I mean, Big East schedule. So with DePaul up next, we saw DePaul yesterday. I think that was yesterday. But anyway, I mean, this was just a great game. I'm happy I was able to tune into it. So, yeah.
And I mean, the Saturday overall was very good. I mean, if we get more Saturdays like that, we're in for a hell of a ride the rest of the year. Because this Saturday, it seemed like nearly every single time slot had a really good, intriguing game. And I know that more and more people are going to trickle over after this Monday, after the college football playoff national championship. And they're going to want a lot, those fans that haven't watched college basketball to this point in the year. I think it's just so many good teams and quality games as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one thing. We don't have players opting out of the NCAA tournament. So you're coming to a sport that cares about postseason play, you can watch college basketball.
There you go. So it's been a little bit of time since all three of us have been together for a show. I mean, obviously my travel schedule over the holidays was something else. I mean, the cross-country trip from Arizona to Indiana and back by car, it's multiple days. And that definitely left me out of the last show. You two did very well. But over the course of the break, between December 19, which I believe was our last show of all three of us, and now, a lot's happened since then. And I just wanted to get in your guys' head and see what teams have really impressed you, what they've done within this 3-week span of time.
My team is certainly the Indiana Hoosiers. They destroyed my Ohio State Buckeyes. I mean, the first half was a little bit pretty, but the second half, Trace Jackson Davis, he looked like Shaq out there. He scored 27 points, 11 for 17 from the field. He was a stud, and I think it really showed how good this Indiana team is. I mean, it's always tough to play in Assembly Hall, but going through the rest of Indiana's schedule through the month of December and up to this past Thursday against Ohio State, I mean, they picked up a great win against Notre Dame. This was before we left for break, but they lost to Wisconsin, which I would say has the favorite for National Player of the Year right now in Johnny Davis. So, yeah. I love the Big Ten. The Big Ten is in such great hands, and I know my Buckeyes lost in Indiana, but I was very impressed with Mike Woodson and the Hoosiers this past Thursday night.
Yeah, and that win against Ohio State that they got this past Thursday was a huge win. That I think that could set the table for a really good Indiana performance in this Big Ten conference slate. It just seemed like anything that could go right, especially in the second half, did go right. And that was very, very satisfying for me to see. Maybe not so much for you, Mr. Cantini, but I loved it. I figured.
Yeah, I would like to add, though, earlier in the break, when Ohio State played Nebraska, freshman Malachi Branham put on a performance that a Big Ten freshman hasn't really done in a lot of the past couple of years. I mean, Malachi Branham scored 35 points and pretty much led the Buckeyes, carried them to come back against a Nebraska Cornhusker team that they had no business being behind, and they put out a victory in overtime. So the Buckeyes are 3-1, and they really should be 2-2, but Malachi Branham really stepped up. And like we said earlier in the year, one of those players for the Buckeyes behind EJ Liddell was going to need to step up. And as of right now, it looks like Branham is that guy.
All right. How about you, Dominic Stern? Where are you at with your team that really impressed you over the holidays?
I've been super impressed with Villanova because we talked about it a couple shows ago. They didn't have like that big win. Their big win was against Tennessee, but they kind of struggled against some teams. Bad loss to Baylor, bad loss at Creighton. And the defense had them playing well. The offense was, it was there. But this team, they're not deep. The last four games have been uber impressive. 13-point win against Xavier, in which they're down by 9 at halftime, had to come back and kill them in the second half, which is something they do at home really well. They won at Seton Hall by 6, and we've seen time and time again Seton Hall is very good. They destroyed Creighton, who beat them by 20. They beat Creighton by 34 points, and then went on the road against a DePaul team that's been pretty solid and beat them by 15. So I've been super impressed as of late with Villanova. I think this team's back. The offense is really in a groove. They just go so slow, and they make you be perfect because they give you as little opportunities as possible. And they've got the formula. They make their free throws. They make their threes. They don't make twos as much as you'd like them to, but they do everything else, and they don't really turn the ball over.
And Villanova really needed this rebound. And excuse me, they only scored 36 points at Baylor. Like, that was just like, oh boy, we got a problem on our hands. I mean, the 20-point loss at Creighton was like, uh-oh, now we're really getting into some problems. But what they've done over the course of these four games is they've really reasserted themselves as the favorite in the Big East Conference. And they have finally cracked the top five in the KenPom ranks this season. That's the first time they've done that. That was following the DePaul game. And let's not really sound on DePaul too much. I mean, they gave Villanova a good challenge for a little bit of time before Villanova ran away with that game and get that 15-point scoreline. So there's definitely a lot to say about that Villanova Wildcat team. And I think as well, over the course of the last few weeks, I think Auburn has really put themselves in a very good position going forward with some of the games they've played. On the 18th, the day before we had our show, the 19th, the win at St. Louis. I don't know how well it's going to hold up within the quadrant system, but that was a very solid win on the road, a home win against Murray State. And we've seen what Murray State is capable of with what they've done at Memphis.
We're talking to you, Memphis.
Yeah. And you could say that was when Memphis was going through a little bit of a crisis mode, but we've seen what Murray State can do. And that's a team that's 12-2. And if they actually played against East Tennessee State, they're 13-1, and they're a legitimate at-large contender. So that I thought that was a solid home win. And the home win against LSU on the 29th, a road win against South Carolina, which, I mean, road games in the SEC are not a given. Just ask Alabama how that one worked out for them against Missouri. And then a home win against Florida was really impressive. And the announcers for that game were really crediting that atmosphere as being one of the best in all of college basketball. And what's going on there with guys like Jabari Smith and guys like Walker Kessler? That's a team you have to be scared of in the SEC. That's a team that can win the SEC. And that is a super scary team. I don't know if anyone wants to play in March because they have good guard play. That's one of the pillars to get you to a national championship. Lockwood Castle was just doing all kinds of things inside. He's been a really good get for this Auburn team. And then the sophomores and Katie Johnson and Wendell Green have put up their contributions as well. Katie Johnson was the one that started on Saturday with 23 points. And Wendell Green at 13 himself. And so you're really going to see an Auburn team that they're not getting out of the spotlight anytime soon because they are exceptionally good at what they do. And that is something that is going to really carry the SEC. Perhaps the conference is chasing Auburn at this point. Who knows? But I would not be shocked that come March, Auburn's one of those teams that creeps into a number one seed discussion. I think they've really earned that particular position. Maybe not right now, but they're getting up there in a hurry. And that is super, super impressive for the Auburn Tigers. One of the other things we'll do before we go, we'll have a fresh take from Mr. Contini in a little bit. But first, before that, I want to talk about some of the mid-major schools that perhaps have gotten themselves in a good position with the resume at this point in the year, or perhaps in conferences that are trending towards being those conferences where you're going to need at large to get to be a multi-bid league. And I want to start off with Loyola Chicago, a team that has a top 25 strength of record despite a schedule that's 171st. The metrics log for Loyola Chicago. That's not a big problem. And the quad one opportunities they've had, they play in Atlanta, so you got good games against Michigan State and Auburn, and you kept those games within single digits. I think that has the attention of the committee, certainly. Other than that, not necessarily a quad one win in non-conference this past Thursday, and a game that was uniquely scheduled in Salt Lake City in a community college gym, a good 5-point win over San Francisco. And the MVC provides all kinds of quadrant three traps that you could fall into. And I wouldn't be shocked if they fall into at least one. But to this point, Loyola Chicago, with one win in quad one, couple wins in quad two, and no bad losses in the bottom two quadrants, I think that something sums up really well.
They're really good. I mean, they're an incredible program. It's honestly kind of mind-blowing to just watch them. They lost their first two games in Atlanta, and you're like, all right, you know, they won pretty handily in their first four games, but against no one. Like, now they've lost two in a row. They come out, they beat up Arizona State. They open conference play and beat up Indiana State. They go on the road and beat DePaul, who we've talked about. It's been a good team. Go on the road, beat Vanderbilt. And then they have that neutral site win against San Francisco, like you just mentioned. And then they reopen, I guess, to say their conference play against Bradley and get another win. It was an overtime win at home, but still very impressive. They're just really good. They shoot the ball incredibly well. 8th in the country in 3-point percentage and 7th in the country in 2-point percentage. They don't get very many offensive rebounds though, and they turn the ball over a little bit more than you'd like to see, but this team, they're really good, and they're going to be a threat to be an at-large team once again.
Yeah, and you want to talk about a program that's earned their call-up to the Atlantic 10. This Loyola Chicago program has definitely earned that call-up, and that'll be very fascinating going forward to see them within that particular conference. But right now in the MVC, a lot of work to do. There are no more quad one games in the schedule for Loyola Chicago. Only 4 games in quad two, 7 in quad three, 4 in quad four. There is work to do if you are Loyola Chicago and try to minimize the damage as best you can. How about the Belmont Bruins? In the OVC, they also have earned the call up to the Missouri Valley Conference. There's a lot of traps in the OVC. I think that is well documented. This is outside of Belmont, and we'll talk about Murray State a little bit more later on. The OVC is not a good conference. Plenty of teams outside the top 300 in net. It's only going to equate to all kinds of quad four games. But if you're this Belmont team, 28th in net, 35th in your strength of record, analytics, other analytics are pretty solid as well, arranging around the top 40 except for the KPI. Two quad one wins. They came in back-to-back games at St. Louis and home against Chattanooga, which I'll talk a little bit more as soon as we'll get about that as soon as we hear from Mr. Contini. Couple wins in quad two. They're not in a bad spot either.
Yeah, I mean, this Belmont team is very, very interesting. I mean, they opened up the season against a good OU team, which I kind of want to bring up in this mid-major talk. But Belmont, yeah, they have the performances there. It's just, it's a weird, like, a bunch of different assortment of games. They were blown out by a great LSU team. They lost to OU, like I said, and they have the wins to back it up. It's just, there's not much left for them to build a great resume besides their games against, like you said, Murray State.
Yeah, this is a team that's going to have to build their resume through volume of wins. I don't think there's any denying that, especially when you look at those two quad one wins and the stipulations that are about them. The game at St. Louis. St. Louis needs to stay in the top 75 in net for that to still be a quad one game. They're currently 67th. I don't know how much the A-10 can help that with as crazy as it is. Chattanooga, that's the team we're going to talk about next. They're 29th in net. That has to stay in the top 30 in net for that to still be a quad one game. That ain't happening. I don't think that's happening. But I do want to give a lot of respect though to Chattanooga with a top 40 strength of record to this point. Number 29 in net, as I mentioned, you know, and a quad one win at VCU. And that's gonna end up being their biggest win of the year with the SoCon. Not as bad as the OVC. A lot of their games are in quadrant three instead of quadrant four. So that's a little bit of a boost. But this Chattanooga win, this team, again, similar to Belmont, they're going to have to build a resume through volume of wins. And I don't know how viable that is with a team that's 60th in KenPom and is kind of all over the place in some of the other metrics.
It's going to be tough. And I can't remember the last, I guess Wofford, they were an at-large team, but I think they only had two or three losses. So they're going to have to practically run the table here in SoCon play, but they're good enough. I mean, they got that slow pace. They have a really good offense. So I do like this team. They get rebounds like crazy. Got to watch out for Chattanooga, the Mocs.
Yeah, that Wofford team was something else. But then the 2018-19 season, they ran the table in the SoCon 18-0. They were 30-5 overall. And it was still, I mean, it's still going to be in a one-bit league with the conference tournament championship also going to Wofford. But that was a team that started on 121st, and they just worked their way over the course of time. And for a lot of that SoCon season, they were still hovering around the top 40 within KenPom, I should say, excuse me. Chattanooga, a lot weaker, a defense that's approaching not being the top 150, but I think it's going to take another very similar situation. Run the table in the SoCon, perhaps even win your conference tournament, depending on how things go. And I think that I don't know if there is room for a loss in the SoCon play with the Chattanooga team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is room. That's just one of those situations where you're going to have to pretty much run the table with eight games in quad three, five games in quad four. But I do want to give a lot of credit, though, to this Chattanooga team for being as high as they are in net to this point in the year. Davidson, they picked up a big win on Saturday against Rhode Island, a game that Rhode Island led for a good amount of time. And I think that that would have been a loss for Davidson. I almost think the A-10 multi-bid door would have been slammed shut. But Davidson, I think, keeps it alive for right now. 38th in net, 39th in strength of record. Other analytics are a little all over the place. KenPom and Sadrum has within the top 50, KPI 108th. There is one more opportunity yet for Davidson to get a quad one win. That's at VCU on Tuesday, January 18th. There are six games in quad two that are left, five in quad three, 3 and quad 4, including on Tuesday against UMass at home. And really, it could very well be too if there are not a bunch of reschedules that happen between now and then with the game that got canceled against Duquesne. But this Davidson team seems to be the Atlantic 10's final chance at a multi-bid, and it'll probably have to happen through a bid-stealing fashion. VCU, 53rd in net, solid. They don't have a quad one win, and they have two more opportunities against Davidson and St. Louis, but on the road, we'll see where St. Louis is when that game comes around at the end of the year. St. Louis, again, 67th. Outside of that, you have a really hard time finding a resume that really meets the standard. And Davidson, I think, is the last hope for this conference to be a multi-bid league and keep that streak running for pretty much 15 years of being a multi-bid league. We thought it'd be St. Bonaventure. That has not panned out. But this Davidson team, I mean, as long as they avoid the landmines, I think they have enough.
Yeah, I would agree, Nick. I mean, I love this Davidson team. I mean, I have a little bit of a bias because one of my childhood friends plays for Davidson, comes off the bench. Desmond Watson went to high school, my rival high school. So I'm excited. I'm glad to see Davidson doing well. I mean, they are an historic program in college basketball, so it's always great to see the Wildcats do what they can do in the Atlantic 10 Conference. And they've definitely shown what they can do. And like you said, there's not much slipping and sliding they can do the rest of the way. But if they hold their own, I expect them to be in the tournament in March.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that this team has all the builds to be a tournament team and like have some success in the tournament. They shoot the ball incredibly well. Second in the country in 3-point percentage at 41.3%. They lost two of their first three games, haven't lost since then. So super impressive. They're almost coming on 2 months without a loss. Like, I think the Wildcats are in a great spot. I think they're almost like assuredly going to get in.
Yeah, and with so many quad two games, I mean, they have the opportunity for sure to pick up some wins there. UAB, currently 42nd in net, and they didn't necessarily have a bad loss until last night at Rice, a quad three loss on the road. And that is the first bad loss for a UAB team that has no more games in quad one left, only three more chances in quad two, and a couple in a row on January 22 and 27 at Louisiana Tech and Western Kentucky. 5 in quad three, 6 in quad four. Matches again are a little all over the place. Unlike some of the other teams we've talked about, UAB isn't quite as high in the strength of record at 72nd. KenPom, BPI, and Sadrin have this team in the top 50. It is close, though, KPI number 80. This UAB team has work to do. Very similar to Belmont, quite frankly. I think it is going to have to come through a volume of wins. You have the quad two opportunities left, but I almost think you cannot lose in quad number four. And I don't know if you can afford a loss in quad number three. That's going to be very tough to really justify in my book there as well. But, you know, some of the games that they've played, again, also the quad one win at St. Louis. So St. Louis has a big role to play in getting us mid-major at large this year. And UAB is another one of those teams.
Yeah, the Blazers, they're also good. They're a more balanced team than some of these other teams we've talked about. And their plethora of wins, because they've had the ability to stay healthy, like not get COVID, which has proven to be a challenge for a lot of teams, especially with Omicron running rampant. And they have the ability to keep building up these wins. Now, them not going on a COVID pause leaves you for some concern because, Nick, like you mentioned, you're going to want to just keep racking up the wins. And if you're out for a week and a half or whatever your COVID pause ends up being, you're missing out on opportunities to keep building your resume with even more wins. And if they can get there, I think UAB should definitely be a team that going into their conference tournament, they might not have to win it and they can still get a 10 or an 11 or even a 9 seed.
Yeah, a team that only has mean, they have four losses, so they are going to have to really get a lot of work done. They don't have a quad two, and they're 0-2 there with three opportunities left. I almost think that this is going to have to be a run the table situation for UAB, and then lose in the final of the conference tournament for an at large. I can't see much of a path, unless they win all three quad two games and then only lose once the rest of the way in quad three. That's probably the only way I would try and justify it for this UAB team. Murray State, one of the last teams I want to discuss within the mid-major discussions this week, 46 in net. They've had a good rise. They were as high as 38th at one point. They do have the strength of schedule, strength of record, I should say, in their favor at 36. Strength of schedule because you're the OVC outside the top 300. Analytics quite are not buying Murray State. 77th in KenPom. Only other team sheet metric within the top 50 for them is BPI at 46. KPI has this team all the way down at 248. So that may be very interesting the rest of the way. Now, Belmont, both Belmont games, Murray State qualify as quad one games for now. If Belmont slips outside the top 30, the home game is no longer a quad one. But it does bring up a very interesting point to where the East Tennessee State loss will probably kill you or if you are Murray State. If you're the OVC, would you rather have either Belmont or Murray State sweep that season series and hope that that the other wins the conference tournament? Or would you rather have them split the games in the regular season and meet for a third time in the conference tournament to set up the score?
I would say split, and then me in the conference tournament set up the score, because that gives you another – that would give you another game to see them against each other. And it would show, like, especially if all three games are close, I would say both teams are still in. So, it's definitely interesting, but – I totally agree with you, Nick.
Yeah, I think they should split too. Or that's best case scenario.
All right. So, and again, I mean, it's not like these teams don't have work to do within their own rights. I mean, they got to almost run the table in quad four as best they can and really just kind of go from there almost, I would say. But we're almost out of time on this particular show. I do want to give Mr. Contini some time to give some of his thoughts on a particular subject. We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier between the two of us, but I do want to give you some time on your own to kind of hammer out some stuff. And this, and one of the tweets I put out from the LSU Tennessee game was that the overrated chants, I think the clearest we'll hear all year on television. And we had a little bit of discussion on that. So I want to give you some time to lay out your thoughts for us.
Yeah, I think the overrated chant is the most stupid chant in all the sports. First of all, for one, it downplays the win that your team is about to have. Secondly, most of the time, the overrated team that you're chanting that's overrated is not overrated. And it's just, I just think it's a stupid chant. Like, Ohio State does it every year against Michigan. I mean, yeah, they hate Michigan, but still, I mean, Michigan's always good, dude. They're not overrated, but it's interesting. I loved my song this week because the overrated chant is awful. I was thinking there's no world that it needs to be in for sports, period.
I would say that the overrated chant is overrated. If we're being fully honest,
there we go.
No, I agree. The main thing is it just downplays what your team is doing. That's like why.
You know, some student sections like to have fun. You know, maybe the meme where the guy's trying to tell the other shh might apply in this particular situation with that chant. But you know, there are certain things that, you know, I kind of get old man Jenkins on and just kind of like not get thrilled by. But you guys are absolutely right. It's fun.
Basketball's fun.
I mean, do we really need the overrated chant? I mean, come on. So that'll do it for this week's edition of the College Basketball Nation. We'll get more of our traditional segments back in next week when we have our traditional timeline back set in place. We're looking forward to that. And of course, in 2 weeks' time, here's a big announcement for you. We'll be back in our traditional Blaze time slot in 2 weeks. So that'll be fun as well. But for now, for Dom Contini, Dominic Stern, I'm Nicholas Hodel. Have a very good week, and we'll see you right back here on the Bonanza, your preferred podcast platform, next week.